Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
And Plato said, the unexamined life is not worth living. We examine many aspects of life on our program.
And tonight we're going to examine technology, its accelerated growth, its increasing effect on the human experience and culture.
And technology is not really a simple thing to talk about because it's more than what we often think about when we say the word.
What is technology then?
When we think of it, we think of cell phones, computers, robots, and spaceships. One of the definitions is the application of knowledge for practical ends. Or the sum of the ways in which social groups provide themselves with material objects. It's nothing new. I mean, the first time someone picked up a stick to use it to make it easier to do something, that was technology.
But it does represent something new.
It does, but it's like an application. So when we invented the wheel and writing and, you know, sharpened the first rock or made fire, all of that is technology, and all of it changed us radically.
It carries us into the future at some aspect.
And it has been wonderful. I mean, people who've grown up in today's technological environment have no clue what it was like before. I mean, they might see old movies or something. And actually, those of us who are in our 50s or 60s who have gotten used to it, we really don't see how much of a big change it is over the way it was 40 years ago.
I hear that movies that have the old phones that sit on a desk or were on the wall, they're now considered arcane, and no, we only need movies with cell phones in them.
It probably are, but you know what's interesting is we have a dial-up phone, one of the very old phones at our house, and when the power goes out, that telephone works because it uses the power of the phone line. If the phone line's down, it doesn't work, but the phone line has its own power source, so we have telephone when we have no power.
Yes, how often we forget how easy that was to use.
Yeah. Think about what technology's done. We've gone to the moon, and we went to the moon when I was a teenager, before I went to Vietnam. We've sent spacecraft into not only to see the other planets, but, you know, one of them is now technically leaving the solar system and headed towards the stars. You know, the closest star traveling at 186,000 miles a second takes 4 years. And we have a spaceship now that's headed out in that direction. And some people debate, you know, the wisdom of that, you know, giving our address to potentially harmful aliens.
Well, I think we still look at space as unconquered territory, and we know as little about it as we do the deep oceans.
Oh, that's true. And space is, it's so vast. We don't understand. I'm sure there are people that think that humanity is going to pollute space.
Yes.
But they don't realize that if we toss the entire planet into the sun, it would be a blip.
Well, I think even the stuff that they call space junk, it's junk because it's in our solar system and circulating around with us.
Well, it's actually just in our own little orbit here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So technology is never good or bad. It's like everything else. It is what it is, and we use it in ways that will make it good or bad. You know, we can do that with human interactions, with everything else. You know, we invented the wheel, and the wheel can cause people to go places that they couldn't have gone before and go faster and make machines run. And people can get their fingers caught in those machines, and people can get run over by cars. So, again, it was an invention. They made chariots with a wheel, and a lot of people got killed from chariots, but it's just a thing.
And look at the things that we have invented in the medical field right now that are benefiting millions, if not just a few thousands, like the new technology with helping people that have been suffered a spinal injury. And they're incapacitated from the chest down, and they're now, with the new marriage of different technologies, able to help them stand up.
And, you know, almost all of that type of technology, we forget that it's all electrical, and we have to think of how many people were damaged by electricity, shocked to death. Electricity's caused fires. So it's a wonderful tool that does a lot of wonderful things, but I think every good carries in it inherent evil, and every safe thing carries in it inherent danger.
That's true. But by and large, technology is created for the benefit of mankind, or is intended to. And it's often like the nuclear devices that wound up being harmful. Those inventors felt sorrow for that. Their intent was to create something beneficial to mankind.
Right. You know, but we look at things like our cell phones and how, you know, how much they benefit us by making our life easier. But think about what it does to our mind. You know, I remember when I used to ask people for someone's phone number, and they would just recite it to me. Now, almost always, they have to look in their phone, even for their own number.
I know, and that I don't know if that makes us lazy, forgetful, or it, we know that it's there some way that's quicker than relying on our memory.
No, I think in many cases we don't remember because we know the phone will do it for us, and we have to understand that the problem with all things, including technology, is the overuse. Drugs are not a problem. Drug addiction is a problem. Food is not a problem. Food addiction is a problem. Using your telephone or your computer for all of your mental work, whether you think it's good or bad, is going to make your brain less able to do that work. Use it or lose it is a phrase that's said often for a reason.
I kind of think of the web as something we resort to as to the exclusion of all else. We justify its use for many reasons, but we also, it's become a part of us so seamlessly that it almost is an addiction.
Well, there are things on it that are an addiction. We were having this discussion off the air that I think the web is a source of data, but how we access it is the addiction. You know, when we used to want to get on the internet, we'd have to turn on our computer and, you know, go to the internet and do searches. And now, I was demonstrating to Pat earlier, I can talk to my phone and tell it that I want to find some information on the tool, and all I had to do was pick the phone up and say a short phrase, and I have several pieces of information that immediately pop up. And, of course, that's caused another problem we've talked about.
Well, I think there's pretty basic reasons why we resort to the web all the time. One is we think that we have privacy. Because we're in our home or office, we're usually alone, we're shopping, or we're even dating, okay? We have this premise of that somehow this is private. The other thing we do is social. It's a social contact. It's contacting family that lives far away, which is beneficial. And yet there's Facebook and Twitter where we can get addicted to that kind of social interaction on a non-personal communication.
Well, and that's true, but I had brought up the point where some people, you know, before we had technology, there would be those people that were just so addicted to gossip and just kind of mindless talk that would just numb your brain, and they would just ramble on and on and on. So I think that's just a human quality, and the medium of communication is Facebook or Twitter or the internet, and so those people are doing, the problem is that they have a much bigger audience now. That's where the, I don't know if it's an addiction, but that's where the problem comes in. That's an ego thing. They think 100,000 people are listening to them, and so they tell them, I just came out of the bathroom. You know, it's like, what's the point?
Not only that, but you have two extremes. You have that ham or the narcissist who has to tell everybody everything they do every day, and then you have the extreme opposite of the voyeur who's watching what's going on, really isn't participating. And I even referred to it as the peeping Tom of decades ago who's watching people without their even knowledge because someone's posting publicly on Facebook.
Well, a voyeur might do that, but a peeping Tom, if they're publishing it, to me that's the equivalent of you standing naked in front of an open lit window. That's not really a peeping Tom. That's somebody that's seeing what you're showing. A peeping Tom is someone who sneaks up to the window when there's a curtain and lifts the curtain to look in. But you know, I both of those things can be taken to extremes because people have always done that kind of thing. I had mentioned or thought about this idea of the paperless office because I remember in the 90s we were told about that a lot. You know, we won't need paper anymore. And I can remember when I worked for a company back in the 90s that I realized back then that actually we can create more paper now, because you used to have to write or type to create a page of information. Now it's all there, been put in there from a lot of different sources, and you can print up 100 pages by pushing one button. And I watched a computer programmer who was, as he was developing the program, he would run a 150-page report just to look at a couple of the lines, because that was more intuitive for him than having to run it to the screen and look at it. He was just being lazy, but then he wasn't buying the paper.
Well, I think that was part of all of us who didn't grow up with technology. If you grew up with that on-screen display of everything, then you thought nothing of having to have a piece of paper to see it. But those of us that were raised with books and everything that was on paper, particularly if you were in the professional field where you had to have everything written down, memos were documented, all of that, it was your evidence that you did something, that piece of paper. So it was really hard to let go of that and embrace the idea that it's there in that machine somewhere and I can always go find it again.
But you know what? My good old friend, government, dictates now that we still have paper, even though they require that we do, like, the electronic health record and so on. My wife and I were having this discussion earlier today that even though they require we have this and we can store the documents electronically, they're still assuming that you have it on paper, and if they audit you for some reason, they're probably going to make you produce it. So what was the point?
The same thing with any kind of legal transaction. Any kind of contract has to still be in writing on paper and everybody sign it. Even though it might be an electronic signature, it still all has to be signed that you really saw it, and it validates that you supposedly read it also.
And contracts is a whole nother. It's one tax that I believe in, and that's a new tax that taxes anybody who creates or uses a contract by the words in the contract.
We divest ourselves of taxes and government tonight.
So technology is just a double-edged sword, like everything in life. It can be good or it can be bad. Automobiles and light and electricity and even food storage has ways of killing us.
If you look at it that way, yes. But again, I think that technology was intended for our benefit. And the web was created to share information. There were groups of people, it was military primarily in the beginning, or government, that wanted to share information, and that became their medium to do it, where you didn't have to send it in the mail or any other way, fax it. So it came from the need, and we filled the need, and it grew from there.
Well, I think that's true of everything, though. I mean, I think the Germans invented poison gas because it was going to be good for their effort to win a war. I mean, a technology is always invented for someone to benefit from it. And the only time it becomes negative is, you know, now we hear about all these children who are becoming obese because, I mean, two things are happening to them. Number one, they're sitting a lot, so they're becoming obese. They're also not developing a lot of skills, motor neuron skills and so on. And because they don't have to imagine like they did when they read a book or they had toy soldiers to play with, because it's all created for them, they're also not developing their creativity and initiative and so on.
They're also not having interpersonal skills. You see it all the time where a group of teenagers are all sitting there and they're communicating with each other on their cell phones rather than speaking to one another. And texting is not the same as speaking to someone. You can't see their face. You can't see, feel their emotion that you can get when you're sitting together.
And that is an interesting phenomenon, that we have all these icons, and there was even a big legal battle recently, or a cultural battle, because some of the icons weren't of the right color. But we have all these icons now for giving emotions through a text message. I mean, I just think that's fun to think about. That when you think about it, what you just said, that we need that human interaction with the emotion, and they're verifying that, because while it's not sufficient, although people in this generation may say it is sufficient, they have to artificially have these, you know, laugh out loud pictures of a smiley face or tears or whatever, We still have them, but we have like a virtual emotion or a virtual interaction.
Yes. And it's interesting when you deal with young people who are very dependent upon text messaging and you have something complex to explain to them and they really, really, really want to do it by text and you have to resort to calling them and say, I really need to talk to you about this because I can't put it in these little short sentences and have you totally comprehend what this is about because it's more complex than three sentences.
And we get hung up in the technology. I just have fond memories of the first time a person I know was so proud. They loved their technology, and they always wanted to show that they had newer technology than someone else. And, you know, we had telephones where we talked to each other on the phone. Then we had email. Then we had texting where we text to each other. And then we have this ability for the text to be spoken and then dictated. And then the latest technology that he was demonstrating to me was that he could speak into the phone and it would create a text message. And the text message would go to the other person and that phone would convert it back into sound. And I said, yeah, I think we call that the telephone.
Yes. And I recently saw the cutest cartoon where these two little kids are getting mail. And it's a letter from grandma. And the kid goes, yeah, it's my grandmother's idea of email.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what email was.
Snail mail.
It was their written word, communication between two people personally.
And you notice that, you know, the words are still the same. You have an email address.
That's right.
And you have a post office box, within your email technology. They use all the same words because it is mail. It's just a lot faster.
Yes. What we've done with technology is we've crunched time to the point of we expect everything in nanoseconds. We expect an immediate response to that text message or that email. You're expecting a response all the time. So we're getting impatient as a society because of it.
Oh, I know. I've seen in people that I know who probably aren't listening tonight, I've seen signs of breakups because of the length of time between a text message and a reply.
And to me, the text message should be something of your choice in controlling the device. If you're that addicted to that device and texting or whatever, you need to take a breath and say, do I really need to respond right now or should I continue focusing on what I'm doing and in 2 minutes or 4 minutes I can get back to whatever it is that is pressing by somebody else?
Well, I agree, but everybody's idea of pressing is very egocentric. What may be important to you is not necessarily important to me. And, you know, how were they raised? How much of the technology was involved with them when they were raised? And you and I can look at that because we came from a time when telephones weren't in every home. We can look at that and say, well, you need to make a choice. But if they were raised with it, if it's a millennial, their context is different. And we really can't judge that because we weren't raised the way they were.
This is true. But again, we all have choices as to how we're going to allow any device to control us, be it television, radio, your car, your telephone, the web.
Or people to control us, or politicians to control us, or laws to control us. It's always a choice. Everything in our life is a choice. And we think it's not traumatic, but to them it may be. If a child is raised, I don't know, if a child's raised in a closet in the dark, it's traumatic for them to come out in the sunshine. To you, it's like, why would you not want to be in the sunshine? So we have to understand their context, because I agree with you about the quality of life, but in order to find an approach that fixes it, we need to understand the contracts and how intense it seems to be to them. One of my questions always is, if everybody's texting and no one is talking to each other anymore, if everyone is doing it, is it a bad thing?
But think about it this way. The guy that marches to a different drummer, he's always the leader. So that just identifies everyone else as a bunch of followers. If they're all sitting there doing the same thing, where is there any pride in being mediocre?
But the people who are going to be leaders always will be.
But again, how you are in charge of that device. You have the choice of when you use it and how you use it. So if you're one of the minions, and the famous phrase now, you're accepting of mediocrity because it's acceptable by everyone else.
But being one of the minions doesn't mean you leave technology. Maybe you're using it in such an innovative way that you become a leader.
Possibly, but it's highly likely if you're sitting there texting your friend and you're all sitting in a circle. It could happen, I agree, but it's highly unlikely.
Well, what if you text something to all of your friends and they just get a good belly laugh out of what you just texted them?
Does that make you a leader? Honest?
But did they have a good time? I mean, it depends. If nobody's been laughing up till that point, yeah, you're a little bit of a leader at that moment
okay.
in time.
Going back to that addiction to the web, a big part of it is entertainment. We do our video games. We do our all of those music games, gaming of all sorts for
sure.
every level, and porn even. It's
no.
a form of entertainment. But you have to have some self-discipline with that. So it
right.
goes back to the device.
I completely agree with that. And I think we probably agree technology is not the problem. But you make choices in your whole life. If you've never seen a cell phone, but you can never refuse a whole pizza, and you become obese because of that, it's the same argument. Technology is just another way that we can abuse things in our life. It in and of itself is just a thing. But we take the easy route, and I think a lot of that, and I know we don't like to get political as much as I do, but I think a lot of that is because we don't have a fear of hunger anymore. And so, sure, you're going to sit around and play video games all day. If you know that food's going to be on the table, whether you go get it or not, shelter's going to be over your head, the electricity is going to be there for your video game. I don't even see drug legalization as a problem. If you have to work to eat, I'll guarantee you there won't be that much addiction. It'll be pretty serious when it does exist because everybody else is going to be busy trying to find a job.
And, you know, it's interesting. They just came out with a statistic last week that between the ages of 20 and 35, 25% of them are still living at home with mom and dad.
Yeah.
It's unprecedented of how dependent these people are on mom and dad. And yet, put them all in a room, and what are they doing? They're all texting everybody else.
Right, because they don't have to be proactive. They can sit and let games, you know, be passive and let games give them their whole environment and text each other and do email all day long because they don't have to go out and find a way. And it's not just about giving people money. It's about guaranteeing people even a job or a wage. I've had to go out and get two or three jobs in my life. It wasn't traumatic. It wasn't easy. But it gives you a motivation to go do something. So you get addicted to this technology a lot of times because you got nothing else going on.
Or your sensory stimulation is being rewarded. A lot of the video technology that we have, even your cell phone, is attuned to your senses.
Absolutely. I mean, people by nature, you know, going back to when we evolved, which is something I like to do a lot, you're walking through the jungle, your mind is constantly looking for input. So you actually get a pleasure from input from your eyes and your ears and all of that. So naturally, that's what you want. And so game creators and technology creators, they're going to give people what they want. That's not their fault. It's the person who accepts that as their input, and that gives you pleasure. And it's just another, it's, you know, you can do it with food, you can do it with drugs, you can do it with technology. It's the person. And again, if you're out there trying to create a financial life for yourself, you don't have time to sit and be addicted to this technology. You just won't, or you'll be hungry.
Yes, and a lot of the kids that are very astute at video gaming, okay, and it's a lot of it is psychologists are saying a part of that is a release of frustration for young teenagers, okay, or young men, that it is an outlet for anger, fear, whatever, to do the video games. And it also is teaching them a skill that the military considers very valuable.
Well, that's the thing, is if you have a life that requires you to go out and produce for yourself, you'll use those games and so on in an appropriate way because there's times when they will be a tool, And you'll do that. And everybody, even hardworking people with three jobs, have some leisure time, and you go play your games. But you won't have this addictive problem because your time is consumed with feeding yourself and sheltering yourself.
Well, I think the other big use of the web and the telephone is, like I said, entertainment. It's not just information and education. It is entertainment. And we use it in all manners of entertainment now, in over and above what we used to use in communication with another person. You used to read a book and discuss that with someone else. That was a form of entertainment for you, socializing. But now we don't do that. We hardly even talk about movies we see anymore.
Well, you know, I agree with that intuitively as a human animal. But again, I have to be always try to be have the intellectual question about these things, and that is, if the whole society is interacting to that degree or in that way, is it a bad thing?
I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. I'm saying that you need to examine its impact on your life. Is it taking control of your life? If you are addicted to that phone, and heaven forbid you didn't have it for a day, could you function?
Well, that is one of the big questions that comes up. You know, all of this stuff, people don't realize now how fragile the actual infrastructure is. And if that infrastructure went away for a day, you know, you'd probably hear about it for a few weeks. But what if it went away for a month or 6 months or a year? There are people on this planet who would be lost. It would be like the dawn of the dead.
Well, think about it this way. If you're one of those people that can't go a day without your cell phone, you are addicted to it.
Yeah.
Because you should be able to function for a day without technology of any kind. We recently went on vacation. There were six of us. We never turned on the television. There was so much interaction between the six of us and, of course, the entertainment of where we were. But it wasn't. There was no need to have that artificial stimulation.
Right. But an addiction does come in all forms. I mean, we are addicted to air. And you'll say we need air to survive. Some people would say that, you know, life just isn't worth living if I don't have my phone. And they'll believe it.
Well, interestingly, Dr. Oz had recently proposed the idea of having a curfew for technology so that every night at 8 o'clock, everyone turned off their electronics in the house and you relied on talking to each other, walking the dog, something other than technology for the rest of the evening. How marvelous. Think about how it would be like a stepping back in time. But think about how peaceful and quiet it would be not having seven phones tingling all the time.
But that's your perception of how it would be.
That's right. And it's my house.
And it's you see, it's all relative. And I agree with most of what you're saying on an intuitive level, but I have to put in the counterbalancing argument because that's what I do. But also, in order to really work on a problem, you do have to understand all of its aspects and the context within which it's a problem. So,
well, you're also assuming it's a problem. If it's not a problem, if you live alone or two of you live together and you're roommates and your lives are totally separate and you just happen to rent this apartment together, then that is a perfectly viable lifestyle for you.
See, there could be times when I'm sitting in the same room with my wife. We have daughters spread around the country, and we are texting in a group texting session. So we're all having these conversations, and we're laughing, and her and I might say something to each other verbally during the conversation, but we're also in communication with all of our daughters, which, of course, is one of the upsides.
The benefits, absolutely.
And, you know, they'll send us pictures during this session, and, you know, we're seeing live photos of what they're doing right at that moment in time. We can do FaceTime. So we can talk to people. So it's so fascinating to me that it is really so relative. And like you said before, it's an addiction really only when it's having a negative effect on your life. And even negative has a relative connotation. What's negative?
Well,
you know, if you're a kid that it's taken away your ability to go out and create your own food or job, but somebody's providing for you, you don't see it as negative.
Let's take a little break, and we'll come back and talk about impact on families, the unit.
And there is a big impact on families.
Give me a kiss to build a dream on. and my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this, a kiss to build a dream on. Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part, a kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
Moment live. Oh, give me what you alone can give. I kiss the build a dream on.
You're listening to Examine Life, and tonight we're talking about technology and its impact. But we want to remind listeners that if you have a business and you want to underwrite and support KKRN, there are many ways to do that. And personally, I have done that. That's how I got introduced to KKRN, and it was beneficial. It has generated business, and you can call the business office at 337-1101 and talk to Ellen, and she'll be able to give you all the information there is about. And they help you actually create the what's going to be said on radio about your business. So it's not like, you know, you can do it yourself, but if you don't feel that you have that skill, they will help you with that.
And I had a business, and they did a very good job with mine, I felt. And if you don't own a business, but you know someone who does, talk to them about it.
Yes, and you can always support the local station, which is all volunteers. We here work, Steve and I both are volunteers. Everybody who does a show is a volunteer. You can monetarily support KKRN. You can go to our website. You can even volunteer with suggesting ideas for fundraisers or participate in fundraising with us.
And if you are listening, you obviously think there's something of value on the station, so try to support it. Pat, before we left the break, told you we're going to be talking about the effect on our family. You know, and we've heard from a lot of different sources how technology is hurting our young. In many ways it is. Obviously, again, there are benefits to society, but we have a growing obesity problem, which is not all caused by technology, but is certainly facilitated by it. And both young adults and children, no one seems to be doing anything about it. The other problems that we're having that are really affecting our kids are that, you know, up to one study done by Kaiser, and this is back in 2010, that's about 5 years ago, children were spending up to 8 hours a day 7.5 hours a day on entertainment technology. And there are skills that you need to survive in life today, unless you're going to live in a machine of some kind, that are not being developed in a lot of children because they're just using the technology to excess.
There's also 75% of children have a TV in their room. This is very dangerous as children get to be 12, 13, 14, and they really want to get on the internet, and not all sites are safe. And they're innocent. I mean, they don't realize that this might be a dangerous website. So if your child has a TV in their room or a computer in their room where they have access to the internet, you need to pull that out of their room and have them get some supervision. Even television, there is a lot of stuff on television that children should not be subjected to until they're old enough to decide whether or not this is something that they want to choose as a part of their life.
Well, I think a lot of parents will tell you they don't have time or they don't want to be the bad guy, and of course that's leading to a lot of our problems. But again, this study that we're talking about right now was 2010. So television is actually probably waning as a problem in the bedrooms, and even computers. It's all on their phones now, and those are very small. And all the information that used to be on your television and your computer are all on your phone or your iPad or your other device. So there's even more access. And
does a six-year-old really need a phone, a cell phone?
You know what? If you ask some parents, they'll tell you that they do, and they'll tell you why they think they do. I would disagree with that. I think, and there's studies to back me up, that there are activities, biological, body, neuromuscular, and mental activities, and things like vision and smell and so on, that develop during play. And, you know, I look at one of my grandkids, you know, I see them more often, and my granddaughter and grandson are out there playing. Their mom makes them go out and play. And you learn skills that you're not learning when you're sitting on a couch.
And you get exposed to things, stimulus, that you are not going to get in a controlled environment like television or the internet. You are going to discover a snail in the dirt. You're going to get dirt under your fingernails, and it's going to help you fight off infection later on in life. All of these things that seem inconsequential have beneficial effects throughout your life.
Right. Just simple things like vision. You know, you develop this, I think it's Broca's area, I believe it is, in the back of your brain there that, you know, vision is not just photons entering your eyes and going into your brain. There's a lot of processing that goes on, and that processing much of it has to be learned. And when you see that snail in three dimensions life, and you're seeing it and smelling it and maybe touching it, those are skills, interactive skills between your senses that you're not going to get when it's all about a game or something on a device.
Well, the other thing is the television and internet is high speed, and children don't have to live high speed. Their brains are still developing. When they become teenagers, their frontal cortex isn't even developed yet, and they're making oftentimes life-changing decisions. And if they're in this constant fast, fast, fast mode, they have a tendency to make fast decisions that aren't very good often, not to mention the ability to not be able to communicate because they're expecting instant results, instant answers. They need to slow down. They need to learn how school is. School is you build on one skill upon another. You can't just jump ahead because it's more interesting to watch that or look at that.
And speaking of those, that last sentence, it's very possible, and some research has shown, that things like ADD, ADHD are being facilitated and or created by the overuse of the technology, that kids never get a chance to develop the idea of focusing on one thing for an extended period of time that they have to focus on rather than having it fed to them by a device. And so, you know, we're creating this kind of, some of these kids will biochemically have ADHD or something like it. There are various degrees of it. And some kids who might not have had it will have it. And those that have it, it might exacerbate it.
Well, the other thing is the child is getting conditioned. Your mom and dad or grandparents, and they're at your house, and you need to Okay, fine. We'll watch television or we'll play games or you can do your internet for 2 hours and then we're going to go do something else. It teaches them to allocate certain time for certain activities. It teaches them self-discipline. Okay, in 2 hours we're going to go outside and water plants or, you know, wash the dog or whatever. It gives them a sense of control over their lives when they're not just sitting there being babysat by the television or the internet.
Yes, interacting with their environment, a new concept. It's really, we're disabling our children to some degree. And, you know, there are some people that are born, you know, ambitious or creative or curious, and they're not going to be damaged by this technology. It's the people that aren't, which are generally the majority, that are going to be damaged by this in a lifelong way. And there'll be some skills that they might be able to catch up later if somehow somebody tears them traumatically away from the technology, but there will be some that can't.
And we, because the internet is so convenient and it's ubiquitous in all our homes, we justify our ignoring family by its use. We need to go look up what's at the movies. We need to, you know, use the internet for this. We need to use the internet for that. And nobody's standing around the kitchen cooking. I don't care if you're baking a cake or you're making pot roast. If the family is there doing it, then it is a family function and you're interacting. And the child is learning. Even that, if that child's a teenager, they're learning something about the kitchen.
Well, and Pat and I disagree a little bit on terms, but the internet to me is a source of information. It's all of the devices. You know, you used to have to get on a computer and turn it on and so on, and now you don't. As I said earlier, you can just speak into your phone, and those devices are what's creating the problem, in my opinion, because the kids have, you know, it's in their pocket or it's on their side, and it's much more difficult to avoid it when it's around with you all the time. It's just like being addicted to a drug. There's a part of your brain that is reminding you that it's time for your next fix. And you have this phone that's constantly vibrating and dinging and doing all these things, and you know it's right there, and it just becomes reflex. I'm a victim of it myself to some degree.
But I don't think you can blame the device. You have to blame the individual. And again, on children, I think they are still learning the self-control mechanisms. They're still learning moderation in all things.
No, I agree with you. You can't blame a gun for shooting someone. You can't blame a device for somebody picking it up. I'm just saying that what they're picking up is a device. The internet is just an information source. The devices are what's making people become more addicted.
And it's our responsibility as parents, right up to age 18, to teach our children how to moderate all things, how to take control, how to be self-controlling of our environment. Not only that, but think about the work ethic. If your child has no chores, he has no goals, he has no task to accomplish, then he doesn't ever develop that skill.
Or even that sense of appreciation. A lot of studies have shown that when someone has to earn something, they automatically have more appreciation for everything that they have. You know, you're forced to do chores. You appreciate things that are unrelated to the chores just because somehow you develop that muscle. And those studies are pretty firm.
And if you are like of age coming, of getting a car, and you have to save the money to buy that car, believe me, you're going to treat it with a whole lot more respect than if mom and dad gave it to you for your 17th birthday.
And some of the other things that that I've discovered in some of the research is just the use of interactive screen time below 3 years of age could actually impair a child's development of the skills needed for math and science.
And I've heard pediatricians say that no child should be set in front of a television before the age of three. They should not have exposure to television because it's overload on their sensories.
Exactly. And I'm one of the unfortunate victims of that. I would say that most of my life philosophy and culture came from Bugs Bunny and his pals, which some people would say is not a bad thing.
Now I know where it comes from.
Yeah, I mean, my generation, before there was internet or cell phone technology, a lot of people abused television. And that happened for me as a child growing up. There were times we didn't have food but we had a TV.
Interestingly, I was not exposed to a lot of television as a child. And to this day, 2 hours in front of the TV and I'm bored. I got to be doing something else. I have to get up. I have to move. I either have to read or knit or something. It just isn't enough. So I guess I was done a favor by not having a lot of television as a child.
And I think that clarifies what you and I have both been talking about tonight, that technology is a thing. We're out in the stars. The iPhone that you're using is going to a satellite in many cases. the GPS devices that are in these phones and accelerometers, the things that are happening in medicine, the lives that we're saving, all of that is wonderful, and it's causing the human race to evolve in wonderful ways, and it has equal potential to be harmful, just like a hammer. You can hit someone in the head or you can hit a nail. The technology is completely harmless.
And going back to space, ironically, they were just talking about the government, our government, the United States, actually developed the technology for GPS and all of the functions it's used for military applications, primarily by our Air Force. But they're the ones that are in control of the satellites and where they are. And interestingly, we have always been in control of the solar system, you might say, for satellites. And it's just recently that China and Russia are starting to threaten us in that capacity. But SpaceX is now, it's no longer government. It's not NASA. SpaceX is a private company that is now launching stuff into space.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and what's wonderful about SpaceX, even though it is right now doing programs for the government, what's wonderful about it is that it's capitalism. You know, they're doing this towards the end of creating entertainment in space and creating reasons for people to go to space. And I've always believed that if you put anything in the hands of private, greedy capitalists, it'll improve all of humanity. And that's what's going to happen. If NASA has an accident in space, it's months or years before they go back. When it's a private company, they don't have that kind of time.
No.
So they're gonna make it happen, and brave people are going to go take chances. And I don't know. I think it's the right way to go.
And think about it. If your child happened to get exposed to any kind of news in the last couple of weeks where the Pathfinder, I guess it was launched in 1997 and it gave us images of Mars. But the New Horizon that was launched in 2005 just passed by Pluto and sent back these fantastic images. Those were some of the last government projects that were done. But think about how that would spur the imagination of a young kid today.
You know, what's fascinating about Pluto is that in 1930, it was discovered as the ninth planet. 2006 or something?
I think it was later than that, 2010 maybe.
It was said not to be a planet because there were too many other bodies similar to Pluto floating around. This flyby that you talk about, there are some aspects of Pluto that are causing some people to start to rethink that thing again.
And in when it was declined as a planet or renamed a non-planet, it was the school kids who had the greatest protest. The little kids that, one, thought of Pluto's the name itself is, we embrace because of Disneyland. Yeah. So we embraced the whole name of Pluto. And it was kids that protested the loudest when they wanted to not make it a planet anymore.
Right. And wonderful advances. You know, this new thing that NASA is talking about, it's a electromagnetic space drive. You know, people were calling it warp drive, and it's not like that. But it does, if it in fact works the way they're saying it's going to, it will you know, cut the time at least in half of getting to Mars. And it's not rockets. It's a whole new technology for traveling in space. And what I keep finding amazing about technology is that when we think something is impossible or science fiction only, someone comes up with it actually working. I don't see anything is impossible.
Well, think about drones. They were just a concept 5 years ago, and now they're ubiquitous. You can find that you can go online, you can go to the local store and buy one.
And now they're a problem.
And interestingly, I thought it was fascinating that the one that they found that had a gun attached to it, and the FBI hunted down that guy, and it turned out to be a college student who was doing a science project. And he never intended to harm anybody. But my thought was, no, that's not what you intended. But think about when you go and get a roommate and he specializes in artificial intelligence and then meets a third guy who does software recognition faces. And now you've married three people, three innovative ideas into possibly finding people that somebody else wants to kill and hunt them down with a drone.
Well, and of course, the government's response to some of these things, like the drones that have been flying in the passive airplanes, is one of the people, and I think the Senate has come up with this idea. Well, we have this software that's guaranteed to fix the problem. It's going to be written into the software on the drone that it can't fly above a certain altitude and so on. And he somehow thinks that's going to work and nobody's going to hack it or something. And I'm always amazed by the limits, the limitations they have on their thought. But think also about, you know, the domestic robot is not far off. Think about this machine that's strong enough, or say you have a domestic gardener robot, and it's got tools for trimming hedges and mowing lawns and weeding and all that. And one of two things happen. Either it decides that your child is a shrub, or somebody hacks it.
Yes.
You know,
hackers they're far ahead of our government. I mean, they make, you know, NSA look like clowns.
And don't get me wrong. I think the idea of robotics is a wonderful idea. I just think the human race needs to keep advancing and growing. But there will always be dangers. And I, for one, think we too badly want to protect us from all dangers.
Well, I think the drone was developed with the idea of search and rescue, for one, finding a lost child or a lost senior with Alzheimer's in a specific area. They can cover a much bigger area much quicker than a human. It has a lot of applications that we don't connect with negative connotations. It's just when it started flying at the same altitude as airplanes that it really has brought a lot of attention to its negative impact on society.
Right. Well, it was invented for war and destruction, actually. But yeah, since that time, there's all these other ideas of how it should be used.
How the government will eventually control it is by having to register when you buy a drone that you have one.
And is that going to work? I mean, that's the point.
I don't think so.
It's the world's just always going to be fraught with new dangers, usually from devices that we created to protect us from old dangers. That's
we just trade them.
That's life, nature, and the universe. Danger is always going to be there. We need to always find ways to teach people to protect themselves, because nothing outside of us can really protect us the way we can protect ourselves.
And so how are you going to protect the dog, the house dog, from the robot that thinks it's a mop? How are we going to do
that? Well, that's the question. You have to know how to deal with your technology, and you have to, when you buy a robot, you need to say, okay, what are the safeguards if this thing decides my dog is a shrub? So you need to know your technology, and too many people don't nowadays. As you talked about earlier off the air, you know, people just go on the web and put stuff out there that's not encrypted, and they don't understand. They're too trusting. But you know what? There were people 50 years ago that had the same problem, where they don't have awareness of what's around them on the street. It's nothing new.
But look, you could buy a Jeep Cherokee with the new technology that it has for locating where it is, and somebody miles away can hack into your car and take control of it.
Exactly.
We buy a car assuming we're going to be in control of it.
Exactly. And, you know, when we had the first cars, which were that we didn't even have roads for them yet, you know, there were probably people getting run over. It's just, the world is always going to be a dangerous place because human life is a lot more fragile than we think it is. However, I think all of society will be safer if we teach people to protect themselves.
I have one question for you before we wrap up, and that's recently the FBI has asked Google, Facebook, and Yahoo, all of the sites, to share their encryption with the government. Why can't the government, who broke the Japanese code and the Nazi codes during World War II, why can't they break the code on the web?
Well, I think that the problem, I thought you were going somewhere else with the question, but the answer to that question is because they've become weak. We're not the nation we were that figured out those codes. I mean, the Japanese code, what we did was we knew some of their code, We knew one of their words. We didn't know their word for midway. So what we did was we knew they had broken one of our codes, so we put out a signal that was supposed to be a regular housekeeping signal and said that our water purifiers on Midway were damaged. And then we listened to their traffic, and we heard their report, and it gave a name for this water purifiers that was damaged, and so we knew then it was Midway. So we did creative things like that. And sometimes, like with the Enigma machines, we just stole the machine.
Yes.
So we were creative and innovative and wanted to win a war, and we were proud of ourselves as a nation, and today we're not.
Is part of it because the encryption is based on algorithms and we can't break that?
Well, encryption is very difficult to break. Right now, they have the right to the government. I was reading on the NSA and what they can do and can't do, and we talked about the emails, and when things are encrypted, it actually gives the government what they think is an ethical, almost legal right to copy that information just because it's encrypted. So since they can't do it, they're allowed to copy it from you and store it somewhere until they can encrypt it. But they can't yet because encryption's a pretty strong way of securing your data. Most people don't use it. It's very difficult to break encryption. And you want a government that's been hacked as much as ours have for the last couple of months at least, and you expect them to break encryption? They can't even protect us. So I'm not really worried about the encryption part. Now, if they force these email companies to give them the encryption, then all bets are off. Then they can do whatever they want. And that, to me, is overstepping for the government.
Is that not more and more of the government mining of so much data they don't even know what they have?
All under the guise of what I said earlier, trying to tell us that they're protecting us instead of us protecting ourselves.
Okay, this has been Examine Life.
I'm Steve.
I'm Pat.
Tonight we've talked about technology. I hope our conversation has stimulated some thought.
And we will be back in 2 weeks. And we want to remind you to help support public radio. And this is KKRN in Bella Vista and Round Mountain, 88.5 FM.
Support your local radio. Have a beautiful night.
Good night.